They're afraid. The heat is baking them. Their shells are crisping. Most of the heat rose in rippling sheets of air, but as the fuel blazed and embers settled out, the seeds were being roasted like sugar hulls in a campfire. Perversely, Anakin shivered as if with cold. Obi-Wan put an arm around his shoulders. Anakin saw that his master's face was beaded with sweat. He, too, could feel the seeds in the fire.
"I've never lost a client. No fear, no fear," Vagno said.
The seeds were afraid, but did not move under their burden of embers and flame. Theirs was courage, and also an awareness of fate or destiny. The seeds did not really think for themselves, but inside of each was the potential for awareness and intelligence. The fire was bringing that awareness to the fore.
"This will happen to you."
Anakin gasped. He was not dreaming.
"This is your destiny. Your fate."
Obi-Wan had said nothing. Anakin knew where the voice was coming from, whom it belonged to, but could not believe what he knew.
"There will be heat, and death, and resurrection. A seed will quicken. Will it burn or shine? Will it think and create, or be ruled by fear and destroy?"
And then the voice fell silent. Obi-Wan's arm tightened around Anakin as if he would protect the boy. "The wave is not what we expected," he said. Anakin stared into the flames, his inmost self suddenly calm. The seeds were changing. They were no longer afraid.
"They'll pop like bombs. Stand back."
Vagno pushed Obi-Wan and Anakin back just as the first explosion sent a cloud of embers high into the air. One, two, three. Suddenly there were many explosions, too many to keep track of. But Anakin knew that all the seeds had survived, and all had been quickened by the flames.
"It's going to be a fabulous ship," he enthused, slapping his knees. "It's going to be the greatest ship ever made."
Obi-Wan felt woozy, a little ill. He had never experienced such a strange twist in his awareness of the living force. That the twist was centered on Anakin was evident, but something about where they were, about the planet itself, gave the effect a peculiar focus and intensity. And perhaps these unprecedented circumstances explained his repeated sensing of the presence of Qui-Gon. Obi-Wan had seen his master impaled on the glowing, singing lightsaber of Darth Maul. The Force had not been gentle or supportive then. Qui-Gon's body had not vanished. It had shown the truth of death, of the severing of all connections with the flesh. And that was as it should be. The Force had a shape, and death was an inevitable part of that shape. Perhaps Obi-Wan was not yet mature enough to let go of all sentiment and all love for his master, to say goodbye to him forever. Vagno and his crew stirred the ashes from the perimeter of the pit. The hoop of limbs and tools dropped lower with the subsidence of the flames, and thick blackened paddles dropped to help them mix the embers. Elsewhere under the broad canopy in the factory valley, new fires burst forth. Obi-Wan could see, kilometers away, hidden by low hills in the terrain, that the canopy itself glowed brilliant with much larger forges than theirs. Far too many to satisfy just a few clients from off-world. "The big ones are being made now, even as we watch," Obi-Wan thought. Vagno put on fireproof waders and jumped into the pit. He flung up clouds of hot ash and laughed as he poked forth something large, maybe 20 times bigger than a seed. He exchanged his tool for a flat-bladed shovel, then flipped out a broad, flat, fringed disc. Immobile, sooty, and gray, his crew grabbed the disc by its fringe and flung it callously onto the back of a carapod. Obi-Wan felt lost in shock and wonder, and an irritating tickle of fear.
"At last, you know the spirit of adventure."
Obi-Wan closed his eyes tightly as if to ward off the voice. He missed his master so intensely that he would not let a vagrant fantasy besmirch his memory. That was what he had convinced himself was happening. He was engaging in a fantasy. Adventure, Anakin said. The boy rode beside Obi-Wan on the carapod. Vagno was taking them across the valley toward a narrower and darker cleft on the southern side. The boy stared at his master intently.
Do you hear him?
He asked. Obi-Wan shook his head. It is not Qui-Gon, he said stiffly. Masters do not return from death.
Are you sure?
Anakin asked. Obi-Wan looked south into the dark maw of the cleft. There were no fires there, no forges. Instead, a cold blue light flickered, and long tendrils crawled like snakes over the wet stone walls and the sandy, rock-strewn floor. Vagno gruffly introduced them to the chief of the shaping team, a tall, wiry man named Vidge. Where Vagno was squat and red, Vidge seemed more like a tall wisp of fog at night, pale with large, wet eyes. Even his clothes were wet, and sprinkled with bits of glowing slime that made him look like a creature hauled forth from the depths of an ocean. Behind him rose a tall warehouse made of roughly assembled sheets of lamina, sagging and corroded from long years of rough use. Vidge grabbed the carapod closest to him by its center leg and pulled it toward the warehouse. Vagno stood back.
Not my place, he said, suddenly humble. Here's a different art.
He waved them to follow Vidge. Tendrils crept into the warehouse from around the edges and spread wide and flat, and at their tips grew broad fruits unlike any they had seen elsewhere. Anakin and Obi-Wan helped Vidge's crew unload the seed discs and arrange them upright in racks near the shaping platform. Here, on a riser about 10 meters wide, Vidge and two assistants lifted a long knife and harvested one of the fruits, slicing it along a lateral line with three swift whacks. A glowing clear fluid within the fruit oozed forth and writhed slowly along the platform, filled with a haze of many flexible white needles that endlessly poked up and receded. From a door at the back of the warehouse, a large carapod crawled out of the shadows. On its back, it balanced two metal and plastic frames, apparently forms for their spacecraft.
Ready-made frames that match your design sent here by Shopafars, Vidge said, sorrowfully, as if announcing the death of a dear friend. The shaping brings it alive.
Another carapod, protected by thick metal plates woven into a fabric shield, carried objects Anakin recognized immediately. Two Haor Chal Type 7 Silver-class light starship engines, as well as a very expensive hyperdrive core unit. And yet a third carapod, much smaller, walked with jaunty steps forward into the greenish light emanating from the warehouse walls. This one carried a very delicate crystalline structure Anakin did not recognize. Obi-Wan, however, did. Organoform circuits had been rumored for hundreds of years and supposedly had been developed on the more advanced rim worlds that had continued to resist involvement with both the Republic and the Trade Federation. Rumors only, until now. What's that? Anakin asked, fascinated by the glittering curves and continually active circuitry.
I think it's the device that will integrate our ship, Obi-Wan said, the interface between the living and the machine.
The first thing Vidge did was cut away and scoop up a thick glob of fluid from the fruit. He spun the glob about, tossed it in the air, and caught it with his long spade, forming it into a ball. He then dropped it deftly onto the back of the smallest carapod where, with a hiss, it settled over the organoform circuit. Cutting loose more globs, he spread them on the edges of each of the white seed discs as his assistants carried them past. Where the gel was painted, the discs turned a dark purple, and the edges began to curl and stretch forth sinuous, questing pseudopods.
Now we move fast, Vidge called out, his tone as slow and tomb-haunted as before, to the Gentari.
Vidge gave them their instructions. From this point on, they would ride inside the frames. Anakin took his position within one frame. Obi-Wan sat in the other.
The carapods exited through the back of the warehouse into the sea-gleam shadows of the cleft. Darker shadows, like giants, rose on each side, backs pressed against the walls of the cleft, with more giants on their broad shoulders. They climbed hundreds of meters to a canopied ribbon of night, a few lonely stars gleaming through the interlaced branches. Anakin felt like an insect about to be squashed. Were there actually giants on either side? Maybe the air was drugged. Maybe it was all an illusion and something dreadful was about to happen to him and to his master. He tucked his chin into his chest, drawing from the exercises he had learned for control of the body's fear. The mind's fear, his worst enemy, the deepest and darkest failing of Anakin Skywalker, was another problem, one he was not sure he would ever overcome. Anakin felt his frame lurch forward as the carapod was brought to a halt by Vidge's crew. Vidge's assistants played bright torch beams along the shadows of the giants, and Anakin saw not arms and legs, but thick green and purple trunks, gleams of metal, glints of other artificial substances, add-ons to the natural makers of the Boras and the Tampazi.
These must be the Gentari, Anakin thought.
Purple vapors rose between the giants, limbs stirred, joints creaked. Stay here inside the frames, no matter what, Vidge said, and handed Anakin and Obi-Wan breather masks. We're loading up the engines and core and organoform circuitry now. They will be conveyed alongside the frames until the time comes for their placement. The ships will be made around you. The seeds will make you part of their dreams of growth. They will ask you questions. Vidge leaned forward to examine Anakin closely. This is crucial. They will make demands. The ship will not be made if you fail to give the necessary guidance. I won't fail, Anakin said. Vidge's crew transferred the engines and core and circuitry to smaller Gentari. Large limbs lifted them high, like giant cranes in a starship maintenance yard. The Gentari! Vidge shouted. All the shapers waved their blades in unison. The makers of Sikot! Hang on, Obi-Wan shouted. It was their turn now. The limbs dropped, lifted them along with the frames and passed them from one Gentari to the next, along with stacks of forged and painted seed discs. Other limbs slapped the discs around the frames, almost jolting the passengers loose. Instantly, the seeds began to join and grow, to mold and shape. The two frames were jammed together to form a single frame. Engines were slipped into their fairings. Seed discs slipped purple-edged tissues on the joins, and sparks flew as the points of lasers darted out and shot beams down from all around. Their journey began. They were passed limb to limb down the cleft, the frame groaning, the fluid tissues of the seeds and the treatment juices flopping and slopping around them, deeper into the realm of the Gentari. Their eyes could hardly follow the process. The Gentari are composites, cybernetic organisms, Obi-Wan shouted. The Magisters must have bred them, made them, and put them here to work for them. Anakin did not disagree, but he was lost to any rational explanation. His seed discs, the former seed partners, were asking him what he wanted. They offered him up Sharpa's catalog of designs, plans for past ships, dreams of what future ships might be like in a century of more development and learning. Sharpa's design was not final. Sikot would have its input as well. Anakin Skywalker was in a very special heaven. After a while, in his own time and in his own way, Obi-Wan joined him, and together they listened to the seed discs, to the Gentari. In the blur of speed and questions, they lost all sense of time. The frame and the new ship owners sped down the cleft, surrounded by sparks and vapors and flying tissues and trim bits of metal and plastic. Within less than 10 minutes, they were over 20 kilometers from the warehouse and the shapers, and the finishing was upon them. The passage through the Gentari slowed. Their numbness passed. Perception slowly returned.
Wow! Anakin said when he could breathe again. That was unbelievably rugged.
Wow, Obi-Wan agreed. Anakin was filled with an unadulterated primal delight. He could think of nothing but the Sokotan ship. Obi-Wan could see it in the boy's eyes as they roamed over the smooth, iridescent lines of the ship's interior. Green and blue and red, it gleamed like a coat of ruby and emerald mineral enamel, not just a dead brilliance, but a pulsing quality of light that signified youth and life.
Ferocious! Anakin cried out in approval. It's here! I can't believe it's really here!
Wraith Sinar's first foreboding came with a mechanical shiver of his E5. Sinar entered the viewing area in a tight-cinched sleep gown, wondering what the subdued whirring and clinking was all about. He brought out a small hollow analyzer. Self-analysis, he commanded. What's wrong? The droid returned a series of beeps and whines, too high-pitched and too fast for Sinar's instrument to understand. It was as if the droid was speaking another set of languages entirely, a near impossibility. No one else had tampered with it, and he had programmed this droid himself. Before he could demand a report from the bridge, Captain Kett's image appeared, tinted alarm red.
Commander, 5 battle droids have unexpectedly departed from the weapons bay. Did you order a drill without my knowledge?
I've ordered no such thing. Sinar's lips curled in a brief and silent curse. He had underestimated Tarkin. No doubt Tarkin had customized the droids with hidden subcode blocks containing contingency programs. Sinar had not bothered to look. He had taken some things at face value. Destroy the droid starfighters, he said, trying to keep calm.
That will reveal our presence, Commander.
If we do not destroy them, they will reveal our presence for us. I do not want rogue units in action out there. A vibration came through the ship's hull, turbolasers reaching out with short-range settings.
We have intercepted 1 of the 5,
Kett said.
The others are out of range. I will dispatch...
No. Hold. Sweep this entire system with active sensors, Captain Kett. Let me know the results immediately.
Yes, sir.
Sinar took out his laser pistol and approached the shivering E5 with some trepidation. He wondered if Tarkin's subcodes included orders to assassinate. In truth, however, he could not be sure such subcodes even existed, and he needed to learn quickly. Deactivate and shut down all energy sources. Damp them completely, he ordered, and flashed an authorization code from his analyzer. The droid complied with his instructions, which meant that any subcode programs did not completely wrest control from the main intelligence. The E5 slumped with a weary little howl. Workers at the end of the factory valley helped Anakin and Obi-Wan out of the new-made Sokotan starship and guided them to a platform that surrounded the finishing station. Anakin had never seen a prettier ship. The hull of the little starship glowed faintly from within, and pools of deep-sea luminosity seemed to come and go under its shiny green skin. I wonder if it's lonely, Anakin said. It can stand to be apart from us for a few minutes, Obi-Wan said. Besides, they need to put in the last... I know, Anakin said. I was just wondering. His master's inability to understand what he meant irritated him. The ship filled his eyes and it filled his heart. It seemed so much a part of him. The workers and the artisans at this end of the valley were once again Faroans. They walked over the lamina platform in the near dark, directing the spots of tiny electric torches on the parts of the new ship they wished to examine. This end of the valley was chock-a-block with stone pillars, and bridges made of living tendrils and lamina connected them in a dense network. Obi-Wan patted Anakin's shoulder, reassurance that he was not without feeling that he did understand. and looked west to see if he could make sense of all the other activity they had seen going on in the factory valley. Some hidden and massive project was underway, of that Obi-Wan was sure, something that probably involved all of Zonam Sikot. The Magisters had long ago harnessed the peculiarly ordered and interconnected organisms of the planet to do their bidding. Was it possible that now Sikot and the settlers of Zonana had some mutual interest that demanded even more extensive cooperation, even more construction? Anakin joined Obi-Wan on a long couch as the chief of artisans at this end of the factory valley brought them a tray of cold drinks and a sheath of plans.
My name is Fitch, the Faroan introduced himself. He was shorter than the others and stouter, and his hair was dense black. You've got an extraordinary vessel, Fitch added. My people will have her finished in the next couple of hours. Just the usual non-Sikotan instrumentation to bring the ship up to Republic and higher standards.
Where did you get the hyperdrive core? Anakin asked after he had drained his glass of sweet water. Did you make it here? I've never seen another like it.
We have our sources, Fitch said with a smile. The ship's speed lies in part in those cores, but also in how we connect them with the ship's heart. And with you. The next couple of weeks will be spent learning the ship. You'll be quartered here. You won't go far from the ship, not for the next 48 hours. If you did, the ship would die. She needs you while she's still young and while she's being finished, or she gets, let's say, confused. Like a baby. You're her guardians now.
Obi-Wan stood directly before the Sikotan ship with arms folded. He tuned all his senses and let the Force resume its ascendancy. Anakin, he said quietly. His Padawan turned to face him, expression suddenly serious. I know, he said. I feel it. The middle of the wave, Obi-Wan said. Your trial, I believe. The color drained from Anakin's face. Couldn't it wait until we fly the ship? Obi-Wan did not answer. Anakin looked down at his hands, folded into fists, and relaxed them. All right, he said. It is the way, and I accept it. Do you, Padawan? Obi-Wan asked gently. It is what we've prepared for. Do you feel that as truth, or say it just to placate me? I never lie, Anakin said, looking him straight in the eye, color returning to his face. You have never lied to others, but even worse is to lie to oneself. But the ship, we're responsible for her. She's alive, Obi-Wan. She will die without us. A transport passed low overhead and landed on a pillar nearby. Obi-Wan saw Shikla and Shapa Faras, Gan and Jabitha marching along a bridge to the platform.
We've had difficulties, Gan said, his expression dark and tired. A client has caused substantial damage at middle distance. He injured some of our people, and he escaped. But that's not the worst. There's an invasion squadron within our system. 4 small craft are approaching Zonama. We fear they are fighters. We have boarded the vessel you arrived in with the cooperation of the owner and found hidden trackers. Someone has followed you here. Or you led them here deliberately. Shikla stepped forward.
We have sent a message to the Magister, she said. The ship cannot be delivered until we hear his response.
We had nothing to do with bringing ships here, Obi-Wan said. But if there is a hostile force nearby, how will you defend yourself? Perhaps we can help.
We trust no one, not even Jedi, Shikla Faras said, her expression stony. We've learned this the hard way.
We have to stay with the ship, Anakin cried out.
You will be near the ship, Gan said. You will remain here, in fact. But the ship will stay on Zonama. We have no clear picture of the threat. It may be small, petty traders, a small troop of pirates.
I suspect they are not pirates, Obi-Wan said. Anakin agreed.
Then why so few? Gan asked, turning to Obi-Wan. A Trade Federation invasion force would encircle us with a fleet.
Obi-Wan shook his head. We can only help you if you tell us certain things. Sharpa pushed between Gan and Sheik Lafarz. I believe we can trust these Jedi, he said. Perhaps it's time to tell the story of Vergaer.
What happened to Vergaer? Obi-Wan asked.
No one knows, Sheik Lafarz said. We were afraid you would think we had murdered her.
We have lived in fear since the Far Outsiders, Sharpa said. They were the first to challenge our way of life.
Who are the Far Outsiders? Obi-Wan asked. A moment of silence among the Faroans.
Do we trust the Jedi? Sharpa asked. If the Trade Federation is here,
then they are operating illegally and they might as well be pirates, Obi-Wan said. The Trade Federation is handing over all its weapons and ships to the Senate. The rule of central law is being restored in the Republic. Anakin stood by the Sokotan ship, his hand brushing the surface. His eyes were half closed, and he seemed lost in a dream. Obi-Wan called his name.
Anakin!
The boy jerked and came to attention.
We're in danger, he said, his voice almost a whisper. We should leave here.
Obi-Wan needed no more warning, but he stopped as more Faroans rushed along the bridge, calling for Gan.
There is another! They cried in unison. A second fleet within the system, even larger than the first!
Now, Obi-Wan! Anakin cried.
Obi-Wan looked up and saw descending flashes of light in the sky, two of them. He recognized them instantly. He had faced them before, on Naboo, with Qui-Gon, the most capable and deadly of all the Trade Federation droids.
Droid starfighters, he shouted, and pulled Anakin down beside him just in time to avoid four darting slashes of laser fire. He pulled his lightsaber, Qui-Gon's lightsaber, from his belt, and the glowing green blade hummed to full length. The starfighters were turning for another attack. He faced in that direction to deflect their fire with his blade.
Stay down! Obi-Wan told Anakin,
seeing the boy climb to his knees.
We can escape in the ship, Anakin cried. She's ready to go.
Obi-Wan took hold of the boy's shoulder and pushed him low. Thus distracted, he could not raise the lightsaber in time to provide even a partial deflection for the next laser salvo. The blast knocked him several meters and tumbled him over and over. Obi-Wan could not get up. Something had slammed into his solar plexus, a sharp piece of rock. He found blood there and a hole in his tunic. Anakin made a sound through the smoke, a cough and then a sharp grunt as if he had been struck. Obi-Wan tried to roll over, tried to reach out for his Padawan, but he could not regain control of his body. A figure loomed out of the murk and stood over him, tall, many-jointed, with iridescent golden skin. A booted foot came down on his arm and pinned it.
I could kill you now, Jedi. Your death will restore my honor.
The foot stomped his arm again, nearly breaking it, and kicked the lightsaber out of his hand. The blade skittered and sizzled across the rock. More laser salvos slashed through the air behind the blood carver.
Yes, Jedi, I live,
the blood carver snarled.
I still live.
Anakin had done his best to elude the nightmare that rushed forward out of the smoke, but the laser blasts had stunned him as well as Obi-Wan.
Slave boy.
It was the same blood carver Anakin had encountered in the garbage pit. He carried a long, shaping lance with a wicked blade on the end and moved quick as lightning. The blow stunned Anakin, but he did not lose consciousness. He felt himself lifted by one ankle and swung through the smoke, dripping blood from his nose. As his assailant whirled him about, he saw the Sokotan ship still in her tendril sling, undamaged. The blood carver hoisted Anakin over the ship's side lobe and dropped him in. Then he crawled in after. Anakin found he could move a little, but he pretended to be inert.
Where's Obi-Wan? Is he still alive? How could this all happen so fast?
But he knew. This was the trial, the test no Jedi Temple could provide, no Jedi Master could oversee. The Force is never a nursemaid. Anakin was on his own. The blood carver growled, and Anakin heard a small shriek. Jabitha was pushed forward from the back of the cabin where she had hidden behind a thick cross brace. Jabitha dropped her jaw as if to speak, but the blood carver slapped her hard across the face. Then he swiveled gracefully, grabbed Anakin by the shoulders, and yanked him into the pilot seat. The seat automatically adjusted to Anakin's body, and he felt a greeting from the ship, a tremulous recognition of his presence. Jabitha crawled into a rear passenger seat, whimpering. The blood carver took the seat that had been made for Obi-Wan. He squirmed uncomfortably.
Young Jedi, there is no time to explain. This ship needs you to fly, and I need this ship. You will fly it to orbit above Zonamasi Kot.
What if I don't?
Then I will kill your female.
He swung his lance around and poked the blade against Jabitha's chest. She gasped, but kept very still. Anakin tried to feel for his master's living presence, but there were too many voices outside the ship, too much confusion. The blood carver climbed out of his seat.
I assume silence means you will not fly, so my mission has failed. I will kill the female now and dispose of her body.
No! Anakin shouted. I'll fly! Leave her be! He probed once more and sucked in his breath with relief. He could feel Obi-Wan. He was injured, but still alive. Anakin could not imagine a universe without his master. Anakin ran his hands over the controls. The ship explained her condition to him. She was ready to fly, but her fuel reserves were low. They had not yet been filled by the technicians. We don't have enough fuel to get far, Anakin informed the blood carver. The blood carver grabbed the placket of Anakin's robe.
Then fly to a place with fuel.
Anakin pulled back on the aft thrusters, and the ship's engines sang to life instantly, smoothly, unlike the engines in any other ship he had ever flown. He pushed the control levers forward. The console reached up around his fingers and hands, discouraging physical movement. The ship spoke to him, taught him what to do. Anakin, in turn, suggested that the ship should break free of her cradle and fly straight up for a few hundred meters, then level off and head southwest. The ship did all these things. Anakin could feel his strength returning, and then building. To his dismay, the primary component of that strength was a red heat of anger.
It is the way, boy. Anger and hatred are the fuel. Stoke them, gather strength.
The voice was terrifying in its power. Anakin could not identify its intent. It was raw, the voice of loyalty and survival, and it seemed to sneer at any second guessing. Wraith Sinar looked out from the command bridge and saw the newly arrived fleet of 12 ships maneuvering to join up with his squadron. Tarkin must have already made some significant allies in the Senate to procure so many Republic ships. Ket walked up the steps to the command deck, and Sinar turned to meet him.
Captain Ket, he said, prepare to receive Commander Tarkin. I empower you to coordinate with his command and tender my resignation as commander. You are at the mercy of rogues once again, Captain. I will not be one of those rogues anymore.
Sir, you don't understand. I have orders from Commander Tarkin. He will board Admiral Corvin and assume command at any moment. He does not need your permission.
I see. You cannot resign because you have been placed under arrest. Your rank is frozen pending a formal hearing.
Sinar shook his head and laughed.
By all means, then, do what must be done. I'll be in my quarters, should Tarkin wish to see me.
He climbed down the steps and made his way forward to the commander's quarters and the E-5 droid that waited for him there. Along the way, in the wide main corridor that ran above the cargo holds of the Admiral Corvin, Republic troops blocked his path. Tarkin walked through as the troops parted and greeted Sinar with a curt nod.
We need to talk. Things have gone badly wrong here, and I need to know why.
Sinar's expression was stony.
We should go to my quarters. We can talk there.
What? And have some lackey droid kill us both? We'll go to my ship, Wraith, where I know what to expect.
Oh. Obi-Wan quickly stripped off his ceremonial robe. Underneath, he had worn his more familiar tunic. The large chip of rock had punched him hard, but had not penetrated deeply. The pain was intense, but no problem for a Jedi Knight. "Sheikla is injured," Shaka told him. "The medics are seeing to her. She tells me to do what must be done. Gan is in shock. The leadership seems to devolve upon me now. How may I help you, Jedi?" "I need a transport, a spacecraft if possible," Obi-Wan said, "to follow them."
"You shall have my ship," Shaka said. "I will fly you myself." His face was dark with angry blood. "Not the first time we've fended off invaders, and probably not the last. We'll get your boy back, and then who knows what will be done."
Shaka whistled sharply. His Sikoten ship rose beyond the edge of the platform and wheeled about gracefully. Shaka laid his hand on the instrument panel. The panel's living surface closed around his fingers.
"They've flown south," he said.
Obi-Wan trusted Shaka. The architect seemed more sensible than any of the other Faroans, and perhaps more in tune with the ways of the Force. "I'll ask our ship in the north to join us. Chaza Quinn can help.
And I'll instruct our people to let it go. Now tell me, please, why are you here?"
"A year ago, our temple sent a Jedi Knight named Verger to Zenam Sikot. We came here to buy a ship from you and to find out what happened to Verger." Shaka chuckled grimly.
"She left with the Far Outsiders."
"Who are they?"
"We still do not know for sure.
They arrived 2 years before Verger.
We thought they might be customers who stumbled upon us without a guide. But they were very strange. They knew nothing of our politics, our economics, not to mention simple manners. They, too, seemed to build all their ships and goods from living matter. We managed to communicate a little. The Magister spoke with their ambassadors and quickly learned that they wanted all of our secrets. They wanted complete control of Zenam Sikot. We were naive at first, but in time we realized they were a threat and began our defensive preparations. When we refused to submit, they were, shall we say, offended. Verger arrived with credits for a ship. Old Republic Orodians in ingot form, just like you. When the situation became tense, she volunteered her expertise. She acted on behalf of the Magister and tried to reason with the Far Outsiders. At first, they refused to listen to reason. Did you see the scars around the equator? Obi-Wan nodded. Their weapons were powerful. Shaka listened to his ship for a moment, then said, "The boy is talking with the being who hijacked your ship." Obi-Wan felt a shudder of relief. "You can hear them?" "Of course. We install trackers on all of our ships. I shouldn't tell anyone this, but I have a feeling it isn't going to matter much now. I have no idea how the Magister will react to this second attack."
"What can he do?" Obi-Wan asked. "Your planet is almost defenseless."
Shaka smiled. "And you a Jedi. How little you know. Believe me, Jedi, we are not weak. We defended ourselves very ably. We drove off the Far Outsiders."
Obi-Wan could hardly believe this. "With what?"
"That would be telling, wouldn't it?" Shaka said.
He cocked his head to one side, listening.
"There are large ships dropping from deep space. I think Zenam Sikot is about to be invaded. Again."
Obi-Wan opened a comlink to Chaza Quinn.
Tarkin shook his head. "You messed with the droids. Didn't you trust me?"
He and Wraith Sinar faced each other aboard his headquarters vessel, the converted hauler Rim Merchant Einem.
"No more than you trusted me."
Sinar pointed a long finger at Tarkin.
"You meant for all my efforts to come tumbling down, and then you'd show up and save the day."
Tarkin waxed philosophical.
"This competition. How ridiculous. What has either of us accomplished, Wraith?"
He called up an image of Zenam Sikot in the middle of the cabin and walked around it, chin in hand.
"Our sensors tell us something is going on down there. Perhaps set off by the starfighters, a kind of chase between three ships."
Sinar pointed at the planet's image.
I take it you're going to conquer and take command of Zanamasi Coat. You're going to invade?
I've already given the orders. The ships are taking up their positions around the planet, Tarkin said. The Republic has a strong chancellor, a true leader, and the Senate can be persuaded if you have the right contacts. And I do. I always have, Wraith.
What weapons do you have?
We were given Republic Skymine delivery ships, and we took control of many more Trade Federation starfighters than were assigned to you, with intelligences intact. We also have sufficient firepower aboard the cruisers to lay waste to any inhabited areas should they defy our diplomatic requests. But let's watch this little drama while my fleet makes its powers obvious. The view magnified until they could see the outlines of the three ships flying just above the tops of dense jungle growths along the equator. I recognize a YT-1150. Are the other ships Sikotan? Spacecraft or atmospheric?
Sinar kept his silence. In truth, he did not know.
Captain Migne of the Rim Merchant Einem presented a small image of herself.
Commander Tarkin? There appear to be other ships emerging from hidden hangars on Zanamasi Coat. There are also large constructions buried on the planet that we cannot identify.
They may have a few light defenses, Tarkin said. Nothing starfighters can't handle. Captain Migne, release our first rank of droid starfighters and coordinate their actions with the Skymine layers.
Any warning to the planet, sir, before we begin?
No, Tarkin said huffily. If they don't recognize the rule of law enacted by Republic ships, I doubt we can reason with them.
Tarkin would not be swayed by anything less than complete submission. Sinar ground his teeth.
Anakin, fully recovered now, could feel the ship's immediate response. The wonderful surges of instant power, the way she cut through the air almost as effortlessly as if they had been in a vacuum. But any joy he might have taken in this first flight was tainted by his concern for Obi-Wan. The blood carver stared at the young human, his nose wings closed, sharp as a blade.
I did not kill your master, Keed Daive said. It would have served no purpose.
But you would have killed me once, Anakin said through clenched teeth.
I follow orders, the blood carver said.
So, you're an assassin. Do you even know my name?
You are the only one named Skywalker.
If you're going to kill me, I'd like to know your name.
Ki Daive.
I've never spoken with a blood carver before, Anakin said.
Just fly. We need to find fuel.
I don't know where to get any.
Anakin lied. The seeds knew. They were talking with other parts of Sikot.
And something, or someone else, flowed through his fingers, where they were enmeshed by the controls. Anakin kept seeing misting ghosts around the cabin, like afterimages from bright sun.
I have been very busy in middle distance, Ki Daive said. I have learned where secret reserves of fuel are kept. Fly due south.
Why would they need secret reserves? Anakin asked.
He turned the ship.
There are mysteries on this planet, Ki Daive said with a slight hiss. Not long ago there was a great war.
We saw the damage.
Did you learn what caused the war?
I really don't think I should be talking with you. But I should see how well he reacts to Jedi compulsion. I've never been trained in mind tricks, but I know I can do it, maybe even better than Obi-Wan. The boy shook his head, distracted by seeing a vague image wrap over the blood carver's features. The wraith-like form drifted with Anakin's attention to different parts of the cabin. Who are you, really? Anakin asked to hide his confusion.
I am from an old clan, an even older nation, swallowed by the Republic, taken in after our defeat at the hands of the Lontars. My people have been nearly wiped out. The few survivors were taken to Coruscant and kept in seclusion.
So you lived on Coruscant all your life?
You said you should not be talking to me, Ki Daive reminded him.
What else is there to do? Why didn't you get a ship for yourself?
The wraith took on form still too vague to be identifiable. Then, he made out the feathers, the elliptical eyes. Anakin held back an exclamation and sweat broke out on his forehead.
I don't need this now.
I am not appealing to the seed partners, Ki Daiv said. Too bad. These ships are really great.
I have always hoped for independence, Ki Daiv said.
Yeah, me too.
Fly all over the galaxy, just stopping off for fuel, freedom to see everything, no obligations, no history, no future.
Right, Anakin said.
He's losing focus. He's weak now. Now's the time to move on him. I have to keep control. No distractions.
But he could not push aside the floating image. She was trying to say something, repeating something over and over like a muted recording.
Anakin raised his hands, and the panel let go with a soft sucking sound. The woman's image vanished. He made as if to wriggle the tension out of his fingers.
Got to get used to these controls.
He looked at the blood carver. His fingers instantly formed the graceful shape of compulsion. Ki Daiv seemed unconcerned.
You should let me take you back to Coruscant, Anakin said. I could show you the temple where I live.
Ki Daiv regarded him, eyes small and black, and somehow sad.
We are not destined to share clan.
No, just a visit.
Anakin moved his hand to another position, a milder form of persuasion, and felt for connections in the Force.
Jedi must be in sympathy and understanding with what they seek to control. You and he are not that different.
We're not that different.
We are different, Jedi. You have honor. I have merely the duty to work my way out of disgrace.
Ki Daiv looked at his set of controls. One of several displays spun into view in front of him.
There is a ship chasing us. It is the ship that brought you here, and there is another. Go faster.
Anakin squinted at him. Ki Daiv swung his flexible arm back, and the lance nearly caught Jabitha in the face. She screamed.
Faster. To the Magister's Mountain, the blood carver insisted, his voice chillingly calm.
We're going as fast as we can, Anakin cried.
He did not have the training or the concentration now to compel the blood carver to do anything. He returned his hands to the controls. The little creature instantly returned, filling his eyes and his mind. The image was crystalline. Her large, slanted eyes darted left and right, anticipating danger. Anakin recognized her now. This was Vergaer.
Jedi, she said, whomever you may be, I have left this message in my seed partners in the hopes they will find you. There is little time left. I am leaving with the visitors who have provoked a war here and wiped out half of Zonana Sikot. It is the only way to study them, and the only way to avoid a greater war and save this world.
Anakin tried to stay calm. The integrated seeds contained all of the message that Obi-Wan had caught only a fragment of.
The Zonamans call these visitors Far Outsiders. They are different from all the living things we have studied. The Far Outsiders know nothing of the Force, and the Force knows nothing of them. Yet they are not machines. They are definitely alive, and they may pose a great threat to us all. They are fascinated by me, by my abilities, and they have accepted me in exchange for breaking off their attack and leaving this system. I go with them to learn their secrets, and I vow, as a Jedi Knight, that I will survive and report my discoveries. But also, I lead them away from a planet I have come to love. Know this, Jedi.
Vergaer's face seemed to glow with enthusiasm.
There is a great secret here which you may discover in time. The heart of a great living creature has started to beat, and a great mind has become aware of itself. I have witnessed the birth of an amazing being.
Vergaer turned aside, and the message ended abruptly. There was no more.
What are you staring at?
Ki Daiv asked, thumping the lance on the bulkhead over Anakin's seat. The lance tip left a mark that quickly closed up and healed. Anakin jumped.
Just let me fly, he said, frowning.
He now saw more clearly the shape of his trial.
He knew why he was important, and why he must defeat Ki Daiv and all the others who might try to destroy him. The survival of the Jedi themselves could be at stake.
Shapa pushed his ship until her skin glowed from the heat of friction. They were catching up with Anakin's ship, now about 40 kilometers ahead and 30 kilometers below them. The forward ports had narrowed against the transmission of heat from the ship's skin, but Obi-Wan could still make out the peak of the Magister's Mountain on the horizon.
"My people won't hold fire for much longer," Shapa said. "I wonder if they know what they're getting into, attacking us."
"Clearly they don't," Obi-Wan said. He could not figure out the reason for any attack on Zanana Sikot. Something had gone awry during the transition, the assimilation of Trade Federation ships into the Republic forces. Perhaps outlaw elements in the Trade Federation had broken ranks and gone off on their own.
"Those are Republic vessels," Shapa said, glancing at Obi-Wan. "Mine layers, I think."
Obi-Wan studied the images from Shapa's sensors. They were indeed sky mine delivery ships, and above them, 10,000 kilometers out, Corellian light cruisers found only in the Republic forces.
"Forgive me," Shapa said, "but if you represent the Republic..."
"I know nothing of this," Obi-Wan said grimly.
"Little matter," Shapa said. "We have regarded ourselves as outside the jurisdiction of the Republic, the Trade Federation, or any other governing body. We knew that in time we would have to find an even more obscure hiding place. It is the will of the Potentium."
That word again. A discredited concept from the past. Was the original Magister given Jedi training? Obi-Wan asked.
"Yes," Shapa said with an odd reluctance.
Obi-Wan tried to recall the more obscure bits of the Jedi history he had been taught in the temple. The Potentium had meant a great deal of trouble for the Jedi 100 years before. Advocates of the concept had believed that the Force could not push one into evil, that the universe was infiltrated by a benevolent field of life energy whose instructions were inevitably good. The Potentium, as they called it, was the beginning and ending of all things, and one's connection with it should not be mediated or obscured by any sort of training or discipline. Followers of the Potentium insisted that the Jedi Masters and the Temple hierarchy could not accept the universal good of the Potentium because it meant they were no longer needed. But in the end, those Jedi who had been caught up in the movement had left the Temple, or were pushed out, and dispersed around the galaxy. As far as Obi-Wan could remember, none of the believers had actually succumbed to the dark side of the Force. For days now, a name had remained on the tip of Obi-Wan's tongue, a particularly prominent young Jedi Knight who had left the temple voluntarily and renounced his training. "Was your original Magister named Leor Hall?" he asked. Shapa stared straight ahead through the port on the pilot side of the cabin, jaw tight.
"I knew you would figure things out soon enough," he said.
"He recruited among the Faroans?" Obi-Wan ventured.